This podcast contains strong language and adult themes from the outset. Finding the funny. Finding the funny. With Ruth and Ange, finding the funny. This week, we are absolutely delighted to welcome a podcasting genius onto Finding the Funny. She has been a household name for a number of years and has carved a hugely successful career over many decades. Beginning aged 15 on the GMTV Disney Club, she then went on to have continued success hosting the likes of Top of the Pops, Comic Relief, and becoming a regular team captain on Celebrity Juice. Alongside this, she was working for Radio 1, hosting the iconic Live Lounge, having taken over from Joe Wiley. In 2018, she began her podcasting journey and has created a brand that has helped people all over the world to understand the complexities of grief, mental health, and everything in between. I am, of course, talking about Happy Place, which is in its ninth series and has had over 40 million downloads. This woman is authentic, and it is through her own sharing and authenticity that she has managed to create a brand that is honest, caring, and exceptionally inclusive. We are so pleased, excited, and I think it's safe to say, shitting it just a little bit, to welcome to Finding the Funny, the legendary Fern Cotton.
Yay! Bloody hell, Ruth.
Bloody hell, Ruth.
That was a crap.
What do I do now?
You just be yourself.
Just be you.
Oh, my God. That's all too much. Too much. I can't handle it. But thank you.
True.
What an intro. What an intro.
Well, look, I wanted literally... it to feel a little bit like you were on This Is Your Life.
I do. You run through my life. Brilliant.
We're so excited that you're here, Fern.
Oh, my gosh.
Thanks.
Totally.
I'm excited to be here.
Thank you so much.
Have you heard of a podcast? Do you know what a podcast is?
I've got a loose idea, but I am going to have to just wing my way through this, I'm afraid.
Wing it.
I think you'll be fine.
Yeah, absolutely fine.
I like talking. I think that's all it is, isn't it?
That's all it is. We are definitely much more lowbrow than Happy Place, just to let you know.
I don't know if I'm highbrow, but I think it's more, you know, what my guests say that might elevate us in any way, more so than myself. But well, I'm up for all brows.
Well, yes. Thank you for being on our brow.
Great.
Appreciate that.
Penny brows are welcome.
Yes. Gotta have a good brow.
Love a good brow.
Well, Fern, look, one of my favourite memories I have with you, I did talk to you about this on DM on Instagram, but I feel like it's quite a funny story. It's when I signed with an agency years ago and I made a TV show called The Joy of Teen Sex. It's still kicking around on Channel 4 if you want to go and check it out, go and have a watch. And I had to make a show reel at the time and I basically cobbled together everybody I'd met through James, which obviously you were one of them. I made Fern sit in the Radio 1 Live Lounge and watch me perform the whole of Dizzy Rascal's Bonkers.
I mean, that takes serious courage to do that sort of thing.
That
like
is
just
happy
to stand in the same place that Eminem has stood, Rihanna, whoever it might be, and you're like, I'm going to knock out bonkers now. You watch me go. Like, that is fully fledged confidence.
Yeah, that is Patty to a T. That is Patty in a nutshell.
And then I basically sat down and interviewed you, but I remember, like, it just came to me, like, a couple of weeks ago, I was thinking, shit, I remember when I had that amount of guts to say one of the most iconic radio DJs hosting one of the most iconic radio slots, the Live Lounge, sit there and I'm going to perform bonkers for you.
Yeah. And I'm really, really hoping that footage is still available to
I've got to find it. I've got to get in touch with John Knoll and try and find it. I've got
Please, can you find it? I have to relive that.
Was there any point, Fern, during that performance that you thought, this is fucking bonkers?
This is the thing. I want to watch the footage not only to see Ruth seriously going for it, but also to look at my face for clues as to what I was thinking, because I don't remember the feeling. I probably stored it as a happy memory, but I want to look at my face to go, what was going on in my brain? Was I just going, is this a practical joke? You know, is what
this
is
woman
this?
Has got balls of steel.
Is Jeremy Beadle going to come out and say, gotcha?
It's so magical. Please find it. I'll do anything.
I'll
ring John Noel.
John Noel. Yeah, you ring John Noel. He'll probably respond to you before he responds to me.
On that note, we could go straight into the old...
Yeah, we ready, Ange? Let's do it.
Okay. We're going to do Le Big Questions with
Big budget
fun.
On this show. Big budget.
We do our own. And actually, you've got a
lovely little voice, Ange, haven't you? She's got a lovely voice.
Yes, you all have in your family. You can all sing.
Yeah, we can all bang out a tune, especially Patty, when it comes to bonkers.
I can rap exceptionally well.
As we all know.
Anyway, I think we should go straight into Pat's, because we've been chatting about, you know, Live Lounge and all that.
Yeah.
We had a question in from Stuart on Gram. And Stuart's asked, who is the best act you've seen live and why?
Great question, Stuart.
Okay, great question, Stu. The old Stu pie.
Nice,
Stu. So, there are, you know, I'm going to say two succinctly. One is a gig, and that was Led Zeppelin at the O2, because I'm a diehard Led Zeppelin fan, and I just had accepted at a young age that I will never see them live. You know, John Bonham's no longer with us. It won't happen. And then when they reformed for this, it was sort of a celebration and a charity type thing at the O2. It was to honour, I think, the head of Atlantic who had passed away. And I had to literally call everybody that I'd ever met to try and get a ticket.
Oh, my God.
And I managed to get one. And it was just euphoric. And I actually felt like I had sort of the holiday blues the next day, where you feel that can't be over. Oh. So that was amazing. But then talking about the Live Lounge, it's someone that I've already mentioned, but I think standing in a tiny room with Eminem sort of rapping in your face. I mean, not dissimilar to watching you, Ruth, quite frankly.
Exactly. Very similar artists.
So powerful. And I just thought, this is a privilege to stand and watch someone who is the best at what they do.
Yeah.
And to be that close, with no other audience, like, I've got this guy's attention. I'm just the only person stood there watching bar a few of his massive bodyguards.
Yeah.
It was exceptional. Exceptional. Yeah. And what a talent.
On the back of that, in terms of like your life, because, you know, look, you have done, we'll talk about this a bit more at the end, but you've done amazingly well to carve a sort of new career out for yourself that you wanted and that you have, you know, worked incredibly hard to do. And that is, you know, kudos to you for that. That's so difficult to kind of reinvent yourself and do something different. But when you think back to your Live Lounge days, I mean, when Joe was involved in that, completely iconic. And then obviously that kind of iconic nature remained. What is that like when you kind of go into work and you think, right, today, shit, we've got Eminem on, he's going to rap for us in a tiny room, and then next week we've got Rihanna, and then tomorrow we've got how do you ever like make that feel real for yourself?
I don't know if you do. It's so weird. And I think I really, really felt it after I'd been on maternity leave, because I had my son and then I came back. And, you know, not to sound flippant or ungrateful, but I did before that probably get into a bit of a routine where it wasn't necessarily normal, but I wasn't freaked out by it. I was quite happy. I felt in control, and I felt, you know, like, yeah, this is just what happens here. This is the sort of amazing thing I get to experience all the time. And I probably did get not complacent, but I did just sort of think, yeah, that's how it is. And then I went on maternity leave. And then after sort of 6 months off of that, I came back, and my first day back, I had Justin Timberlake doing a big Live Lounge special in the evening. It was like a big concert. And there was this point where I thought, why do I get to do this? Like, how am I the person that gets, why isn't it someone else? Like, why, this can't be right that it's me. I've just been wiping someone's ass for the last 6 months. Like, this can't be me. Honestly, I really felt like I shouldn't be there. Mm. And then I probably got into the groove after a few weeks. But that first week back, it was so weird. And I felt so grateful and even more sort of honoured to be able to work with artists in that way and interview them and watch them perform live. You know, it was very, very special.
I mean, just, I would imagine, just the most incredible job to... Yeah, I would feel like every day must feel like a pinch me moment, really.
Yeah, amazing.
Did you ever feel, Fern, like, you know, I'm a bit sort of like, I'm not really that big of a fan of like celebrities in inverted commas, as in not that I don't think they're amazing, and especially, you know, these super talented musicians and, you know, DJs and whoever else it might be. But do you ever, like, I quite often just think they are just people. Like, yeah, they're just like you and me. Yeah. They just happen to do a job that means they perform to, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of people. And I don't know, do you ever kind of, do you have those moments where you just think, you know what, it is Justin Timberlake, but he's just a bloke?
Yeah, I think some people in the public eye are really willing to be totally human. So you'll get someone in who's mega huge, like Dave Grohl or Chris Martin, and they are just themselves. Yes. You know, they might show an insecurity or they might say something that's really normal and lovely. But then, of course, you do get other pop stars or celebrities come in and they will not show you any humanness. Anything. They are there and they are, and they're not being arrogant, but they are in their character, and it is fully, you know, it is fully formed, and you're not going to crack it. You're meeting the celebrity version of that person.
Yes.
And, you know, no matter what question you throw at them in that context, you're not going to get anything other than that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's room for it all, I guess. But I do love it when you get someone who's willing to go, look, I'm a human like you, you know, I pick my nose or eat peanut butter out the jar, whatever, fart. And it's that, I love that. Because, you know, we all need that myth to be broken.
Totally.
No one's better than anyone else. No one's, you know, more shiny than anyone else. That's a massive myth. And some people are willing to show you that and other people are not. And the danger is you look at them and you go, God, how are they doing so brilliantly in life? Because to the pictures or the version of themselves they're showing, there's no way that person has got failed relationships in the past, you know, shouts at their kids, burns a meal. Like, they're just perfect. But that's not the case.
No.
It's bollocks.
No.
It's bollocks.
Yeah.
It's bollocks.
Yeah. Okay, well, look, in a complete change of pace, we had a question from Laura on email, and she wanted to know, how did Happy Place come about? How did you start that, what is now an empire?
Well, I guess it was born from a really rough patch where I'd had a big period of depression and really felt totally lost and was on medication for quite a while. And I just felt a bit sort of unsure of what was going to come next. And I'd been talking to my book publisher about writing a book, and I'd already been writing a little column for Glamour about happiness, but I was doing it in a really cryptic way because I hadn't mentioned that what I'd been through. So I said to my publisher, you know, I can either write a book that's sort of just surface but about happiness, or I can really go there if you think that's a good idea. And she said, well, if you feel safe doing it, go for it. So I just sort of experimented and wrote this first book, Happy, which is obviously all about depression and or just moods in general. And I didn't think it would, you know, change anything. I just thought it was just another little project. And then, you know, there was a really good reaction to that book, and that led me to write more and to explore other areas that I was deeply uncomfortable talking about, like panic attacks, because I felt like a complete freak for having them, and like bulimia, which I didn't even want to say out loud because I sort of pretended it didn't happen. And then I realised, God, it's so much better when you say it out loud and that there's conversation. So that's, the podcast was sort of born from that momentum, and all the other stuff that we've now done and are hopefully continuing to build was a big accident, really.
Wow. I mean, an amazing accident.
Yeah. When those things come about, I just think it's just, that was meant to be. There was a kind of a greater power at work there. Yeah. Like, you're like, okay, you know, I'm feeling this. I'm just going to put it down on paper and see what happens. And yeah, I think it's amazing when those things happen.
Yeah, and it makes other stuff make sense, because in the moment when you're feeling terrible, you're like, why is this happening to me? I don't know what's going on. How did I get life so wrong? And really, you're just being steered in another direction and we're resistant to change. So we get a bit stuck in, oh, I just feel like crap and nothing's working out. And it's like, wait, but I could change everything completely and switch things up and look over here. But we don't want to do that. It's too hard. It's too much hard work. But I, you know, I really believe now in that sort of guidance of, right, well, okay, I've got to trust in why I'm going through this tough time. It's got to mean something. It's not pointless. It's not for a reason. Yeah. Why am I experiencing this, and what can I gain from it, and what can I share from it? You know, there's always potential for something from those tricky moments.
Definitely.
Amazing. Well, I mean, we're gonna touch on that a little bit more at the end, because I think the way in which you have so openly discussed, you know, I think it comes back to what we were just saying about, you know, people in the public eye who appear shiny, and I think when somebody shares something deeply painful about themselves, there is somebody in that space that goes, God, I don't feel alone anymore.
Like, yeah.
I can relate to that. I think as much as it's hard to be vulnerable and shed that outer, oh God, I can't say this layer, I think the moment that we do, there's this intrinsic feeling in people that goes, oh God, it's not just me.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Totally.
For being willing to open up about that. It's not just me. I'm not the only one. So
yeah, cool. So I think when we're in a rough place, probably the next thing that we do after just noticing our own, you know, misery or whatever we're in is to go, look at everybody else having a great time. Look at everybody else coping with life. Look at everybody else fulfilling their dreams. So to then hear that that's not true is, you know, you're already losing a whole load of crap you don't need to be carrying around. Oh, God, there's loads of people that have panic attacks or whatever it is that you're dealing with. You can just shed that bit. You have to carry the bit around that feels like you're getting it wrong. And that's lovely.
Yeah. Mm. We had one final question, which is, again, in just another complete change of pace. What's your wildest celebrity story? And that came from Ruth on Instagram.
Yeah, this is tricky because I'm sure there have been some really amazing ones that either I've forgotten or B, I can't say out loud.
Yeah, is it me performing bonkers?
It might be you performing bonkers. That is a pretty cracking one, to be fair. But you know what? I was reminiscing the other day about one of the wildest weekends of my life where I did, you know, and compared to my life now, which is like school runs in the rain, like I did today and whatever. So I did the radio show. I left Radio 1. I got to Heathrow. I flew to LA. I got off that flight. I nearly missed my next flight to Vegas, but I managed to get on this flight to Vegas, landed at, I don't know, it was probably like 7 p.m.
Yeah.
Went and met Paris Hilton for dinner because we were filming this thing about her. Had dinner with Paris Hilton. She was getting right on the shots. So I was like, might as well follow suit.
Might as well join in.
So I'm doing shots. She likes tequila with a shot of pineapple juice after. So I was like, whatever. Right. Let's go for it. So then we had lots of shots, blah, blah, blah. Then we ended up in a nightclub. So by now I've been awake for like 1,000 hours. I've done a radio show in that same day in another continent. So we go out to a club and we're doing that thing that you see on, you know, reality TV shows. We're in a sort of a stepped up area, like a booth with a rope, and everyone's just looking at us dancing on the chairs. It's so weird. So we're just dancing on the chairs and all these people are like taking pictures and looking at us. It was so mental. So then I went to bed at God knows what hour, so drunk, woke up feeling terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know what time of the day. It was probably horrendously early. Did some more filming in the day. Then that night, we go to her, this is Saturday night, go to her hotel suite, which has got a bowling alley in it and various other weird stuff going on. Then we go and watch Kylie Minogue in one of the Vegas hotels, which was brilliant. Then we ended up backstage talking to Matt Goss. I mean, it just gets so weird. Then we went out to another club, and I think she did a PA, like she just, a PA basically was like her going, hey, Vegas, and that was it. And got so drunk that the next day I puked in my hotel room, in a cab, went back to the airport, got a flight. But before I got on the flight, I'd realised I'd packed my wallet in my luggage that had gone onto the hold. So I had no money to buy any food and I was so hungover. And it was the first time in my life I thought, I'm going to have to steal something because I'm so hungry. I didn't go that far. Luckily, I didn't steal anything. I got on the flight. I got back to Heathrow. I landed at 6 a.m. on Monday morning. I went straight back in and did radio.
Oh my god, that is wild.
I know, and she was lovely. I loved her.
She
was brilliant. So That's much cool. fun, and really just up for a laugh. Like she kind of she gets it. She gets it, and it was and she can drink a lot of tequila.
Where do we sign up? How do Andrew and I get those gigs? Where do we sign?
I don't know. I don't get them anymore though. I have to just reminisce because that bit's gone. I don't get to do that anymore. I'm like,
I mean, that is a wild story.
I know. I live off these stories because, as I said, I am like this morning. My cat did a shit out of the cat litter box. Then I'm in the tour and in the rain. Like, I don't do that anymore. The Paris Hilton days are over. I've got to get over
You're saying to honey, eat your breakfast, because this time, like, 10 years ago, I was hanging out with Paris Hilton so drunk I could barely see. Now eat your breakfast.
Yeah, exactly. This is my life. I have to have acceptance of this. This is where we're at.
Yeah. Oh, that is hilarious.
That is fun. Such a great story. Yeah, Thank you for sharing that.
That is honestly, I think that's one of the best stories I've ever
had. It was so good.
Love that.
It was so good.
Oh, that is so
great
fun.
Days, great times.
Right, now then, Fern, we are moving in to the area of what gets on my shitting tits. And I believe you have something to bring for this today.
I do. Are you ready?
I am well ready.
Ready. Weddings.
Yes! That is a brilliant one! God, why have we never done this?
I don't know, but I've got lots to say about this.
Yeah, go for it.
They're too long. You can't sustain fun for that long. It's an absolute joke, right? Too long.
That is true, that is true.
I don't want to sit next to someone I've never met that you, the person that's organised this, think I'm going to get on with. Put me with my friends on the table. Put me on a table with my mates. Don't do a little mix match. We're not doing blind dates. No. Set me up with my mates, okay?
Yeah. I'm with you there, mate.
The speeches are hit and miss. Hit, brilliant. Missed, I want to leave now. I can't bear it. My toes are curling. Help.
Yeah.
Okay? Then there's the bit afterwards where we get to sort of, we're after dinner now. We've done the speeches. Yeah. Then we're moving to the dance floor. Maybe it's sort of 8, 9 p.m. Yeah. I am exhausted. I am drained. I am so drained. I've talked to so many people. My personality has just dissipated into air.
Yeah.
Now I've got to dance.
Yeah.
I don't want to dance. Yeah. And then inevitably there's the first dance, so you will make way for that. And that could be quite sweet. And then you've got to dance again. And it's too long. Yeah, it's too long. My own wedding was short. There wasn't a table to sit on. You just got food whenever you wanted.
Whenever you wanted it.
I took all the photos of every family member in the world. Didn't have that. I just got rid of all the boring bits and I just had a party, because weddings are too long.
But also, the other thing I want to add is, so you do your sit down meal. You do, by this point, if you're an all day guest, you're fucking knackered.
You're dead.
And then you've got the influx of evening guests.
Oh,
and you're like, fuck off. You're too much. You're in my face. I've been sat next to Barry. I don't like Barry. I think he's a bit of a twat. I was put next to Barry because Judith and Chris thought we'd get on well. We don't.
We don't.
I think the guy's a wanker.
Yeah.
And now you've turned up. You look glamorous. You look amazing. My hair looks shit now because I've been here all day.
Yeah.
And you want to party the night away. Fuck off.
But that's an awkward bit.
10.
That's an awkward bit, because you're right. We're dishevelled. They're all rejuvenated and fresh. Yeah. But they're rejuvenated and fresh, yet feel a bit embarrassed. They weren't invited to the day bit.
To the whole thing.
But they bring a bit of baggage with them. Yeah, they're coming in with a bit of resentment.
Yeah. They're like, oh, she's an all-day guest.
Yeah. There's a heady mix of that going on.
Yeah. And
I also
think
with weddings, it is a lot of hanging around.
Oh, so much.
I mean, you just hang around. You know, hang around at the church or your town hall or wherever it is you're getting married. You hang around, you watch all that shit. You come out, you hang around while they take some photos. You hang around while they're making you a drink. It's just your day is hanging around.
In a really uncomfortable clothing that I don't want to be in.
And let's also own it that a lot of wedding food is shit, isn't it?
Oh, it's terrible. Mm. It's really bad.
You know,
it's
really hungry and you sit down and you're like, fucking hell, is that
They spent all the money on the flowers and you are eating a risotto that is like congealed together.
What about people who go batshit fucking crazy with balloons?
Balloons. What's a new thing.
Yes.
That is a new thing.
Also,
not good for the planet.
Not good for
the planet. Get rid of your balloons. Get some fake flowers if you've got to, but not balloons.
No.
That arch rainbow of balloons.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I just don't get that shit.
No, I don't.
Do you know, this is actually a brilliant one, Fern, that you've bought, because there's a lot of places we can go. Do you know the other thing that really, really pisses me off at a wedding? People who have an excessive amount of bridesmaids.
Yes, yes.
Like, you don't need 13 bridesmaids.
You don't. How long is your train? It can't be that long.
You don't need to have all of your second cousins. You don't need to do that.
No.
You don't need to have all of your best friends from school. Like,
no.
You know, one or two, I had four. I feel like four is a good number. But, like, excessive amounts of bridesmaids.
I also hate the gift list. Why can't I choose what I buy you? I don't want to spend my money on a pot. I don't want to do that. I want to buy you something fun. Why am I buying you something that you just couldn't be asked to buy when you moved into your flat? Yeah. I don't want to buy that.
No.
How do we feel about fascinators?
Oh, I've never worn one. I've never dared.
That is a thing for me.
How do we feel about fascinators?
You know,
that's a fucking sensational question.
What What? Why? For first of all, like, why are they called fascinators?
Yeah, why? They're not fascinating.
Is it because
they're not fascinating?
Yeah, but I think people put them on going, great, everyone's going to be fascinated with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone's going to look at me and think, wow, Ange, you're fascinating.
You've got a tiny top hat on your head with a bit of a feather, with a bit of a feather coming out. I'm fascinated.
A bit of lace, a bit of lace hanging over one eye. That is weird shit.
I've never worn one. I've never even worn a hat to a wedding. I'd feel like I was 90. Like, I've never worn a hat.
Oh my god. I'm with you. Weddings.
That is a great one, Fern.
I wish we'd have come up with that.
You'd be here all year because you could go. What? There's so much to dissect.
So much. And the grease Megamix. No one needs that, do they? But out the grease. Girls on one side, boys on the other. Yeah. I don't want to actually. Mm. I don't want to do the grease Megamix.
I do quite like being Sandy.
Of course you do.
Okay, I'll bring Sandy out now. Just five seconds.
I have to admit something here because there's something I don't like, but I've done it. And that is when the one really drunk, usually mum, don't generalise, but I am, takes over the dance floor. And I at my best mate Laura's wedding.
Yes, Fern.
Honey was a toddler still. I was deranged with tiredness. I had my stepkids there too. My husband was at a gig. So I was just like crazed. So then I got, my kids went to stay at my mum's house after the actual daytime bit. For the nighttime bit, my stepkids were teenagers and I thought, I can let loose here.
Yeah.
I drank potentially about, I don't know, six mojitos. And I'm no big drinker these days. And I had not eaten enough because, as we've talked, the food at weddings is not substantial. And I took over the dance floor. There wasn't room for other people to get on it. And I had sort of crafted on the spot routines with my stepdaughter.
Yes.
She was nice enough to think, God, she's being really fun tonight. No, I was just coming. Looking back, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. Okay.
I have also been there, Fern. I've done the same thing. I do quite like a dance floor. You know, dance floor, you know. Give me some banging shoes.
This was you on Friday night. You took over the dance floor at the swanky gig on Friday night.
Right. Although there was another geezer on that dance floor. He was
going for it.
Oh my! I mean, he was an older gentleman, but my God, he was
thrusting.
You know, he was
there was a lot
sticking
of
around on that platform like he was Bruno Mars.
Best night ever.
I loved it. I loved it.
To do that. And to have that confidence, it has to be your best mate's wedding or your brother or your sister's. It can't be like your husband's mate that you've met twice.
No.
Unbearable. This has got to be a close friend where everyone goes, I tolerate this because she's excited.
I'm going to tolerate it. Tolerate being the right word, I think. Tolerate rather than enjoy. Tolerate.
Weddings. One year I had to go to 9. It was just.
Oh my god!
I haven't been invited to one in ages, and I'm sort of glad / people don't invite me anymore. But that's
Fern's mate. If you're listening, if you've got any weddings coming up, make sure she's top of the list. She absolutely loves them.
And make sure you've got a great big bloody dance floor because she'll bring her moves.
I think that's probably one of the best shitting tits we've ever had.
Yeah.
Honestly, genuinely.
Brilliant, Fern.
I think you go in at number one for the best.
Numero uno for Fern Cotton.
I'm saying things people don't want to say out loud, okay?
No. And that's what this is for, Fern. This is what, you know, this is the little place you can say, do you know what? This shit really gets on my titties.
So it's right.
shitting tits, we then all, we also get our listeners, who are always brilliant at this and just bring us some of the best stuff, to do their own sort of observational comedy, which is around dickish behaviour that they spot out and about, or that something that they see somebody and think, God, they're a dickhead.
Yeah. Mm.
We had a dickish behaviour in from Gemma on Instagram, and she said, people who drive a convertible with the roof down when it's not hot or sunny, which I think is a brilliant observation. What
have you ever had a convertible? Have you had it? No. Have you had one, Pat? Have you had a convertible?
No. Got a sunroof.
Got a sunroof. Yeah. Flashy, very flashy. Very, very flashy.
No, I haven't. I don't. No. I get quite cold, so I think even on a hot day, I'd find it disturbing.
Think this is people that do this are mainly men of a certain age, right?
Right.
Don't you think? Like, they're driving a Mazda, which is a hairdresser's car, firstly. I mean, dude, either that or a TT, right? Yeah. Ditch the car, get something decent. Yeah. You're a 55-year-old bloke. You shouldn't be in a red Audi TT, right? And then, you know, it's like, well, listen, lads, you know what? I've bought a convertible now. I've got to fucking have the roof down wherever I can. You know what I'm saying? We get like two hot days in this country. So even if it's pissing it down, when I drive past Sandra's house, who I'm trying to, you know, we get a bit with, I want her to see me with my roof down. Yeah, mate, you don't look cool, dude. Yeah,
it's the very loud music that often accompanies it. Yeah. So you have to look, because you can't not then.
I think if I had a convertible, I think I potentially could fall into that category.
Yeah, I think you could.
I'd be whipping that down. You know,
what do you be playing? What tunes are blaring out of Vange's Audi TT?
Oh, mate. Well, this morning, I had to do a little nip out this morning before we came on here. And I got in my car. I love putting my phone on shuffle in the car.
Right? Oh,
you're like, okay, what the hell am I going to get? What am I going to get? Well, I got in my car this morning. On we go. Shuffle's on. Whitney Houston was my song that came on.
What was it?
I can't bloody remember now.
It was I'm Every Woman. I saw your Instagram. It was I'm Every Woman. I saw your Instagram stories.
I'm Every Woman. And I honestly, it was up as loud as it could be. I was belting it out in my car. So I think I'd be roof down, Whitney vibes, a bit of Bruno. I'd shove Bruno in there.
Yeah.
I don't know who else. Oh, Stormzy. Stormzy would be. Yeah, I'd be all over that. So I think if I had one, I think I could be a bit of a dick.
I think because we're British, we find it very difficult to accept that people are quite willing to let loose and have fun when we're having fun. Maybe we're the problem. Maybe we need to be more accepting. You know what, mate? Good. You're having a great time over
here. Yeah.
Get your
roof down.
This stops right here, right now. Right, fun. You can't come into our space, right?
Right.
You can't try and get Ange on your side. Just because Ange said she would be a dick in this circumstance,
right.
We have to say, Ange, that is dickish. Right. Somebody who's driving today with their roof down, blaring tunes, they are a fucking dickhead. That's it. End of sentence.
Okay, I realise this is not up for sort of diplomatic discussion. We're just saying that this is dickish. I get it.
Dickish. And Ange has waded in and said, oh, I'd be fun time Bobby in this situation. And all of a sudden, we're saying, oh, that's okay.
I'm not saying I'll be fun time Bobby. Okay.
No,
I don't actually really like fun time Bobby. I'm identifying with the fact, and I think this is part of why we do this, is for you to sort of go, do you know what? I think I could show some dickish behaviour in that situation.
Right.
So let's just own that then.
I'm all about that. I can be an absolute prick at times.
Yeah, and we know that.
If I had a convertible, I think I'd be that person.
Right.
Fern, I feel like I went in on you there. Apologies.
You did. This is what this is about. Authentic discussion about life. I don't want to be handed to. I don't want you just being the yes man. I want you to tell you how it is, Ruth.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, when you invite me on the happy place, I keep calling it the happy place and it's really starting to annoy me. I'm so sorry. When you invite me onto happy place, you know, when that call comes in, I am not going to be telling you what we should do in that space because it's your space and I will respect your rules.
Give you a bit of shit on the other side of things.
Exactly, exactly.
There we go.
Right, now we had a dickish behaviour in from Jill on Gram, and Jill says, yeah, I think this is a good one. Adults buying Disney clothes / PJs, I find it slightly weird. You are not five.
Yeah. Right, Fern, what do you think about
this?
What
are your feelings
on
that?
I find pyjamas in general very confusing. I am too hot in the night to have all that on, let alone Daffy Duck staring up at me. No.
Daffy Duck.
I'm just not. Is Daffy Duck even Disney? Probably not. Let's go with Mickey Mouse just so we keep things pretty safe there. I don't want to be in bed with Mickey Mouse. No. Let's put that out there. And I do find that peculiar behaviour.
For me, I think, so look, pyjamas. I don't like pyjamas. I'm with you. I find them too hot. But I think if it's like a pyjama top and you're only wearing it around the house and stuff like that, you know, I can sort of get on board with that.
No.
It's like when Ange and I, a few years ago, as a whole family, we went to Disney, and you see, it's when you see people, for me, the absolute crux is when you see people who are obviously just married, right? And they've got like wifey with a big Minnie Mouse, and he's got hubby with a big Mickey Mouse. I just am like, and then the date of their wedding, and you know, on the back, we're on our honeymoon.
Like, a honeymoon to Disney is confusing to me.
What are you doing?
I just have no words. I don't know what to say.
But also, imagine that wedding. That wedding would get on our shitting tits. The wedding of those two walking around in those hubby and wifey T-shirts. God, can you imagine being a guest at that wedding?
What about people who actually have their wedding at Disney?
At Disney.
Yes.
The service ordained by a cartoon character, is that
probably?
I believe I believe Winnie the Pooh steps out and does the whole procedure.
Can you imagine going to a Disney wedding?
No. Do you remember when we were there, Pats? There was a wedding going on at Epcot. There was people, and it was, you just like, what? I mean, what the fuck is this about? Yeah. It was the most bizarre thing.
I mean, good for them if they're having a great time, but I personally, I don't understand.
No.
And also, I don't get the why. Why are Disney making adult size
clothes?
Disney shit. You know, your T-shirts, your PJs.
There's a market for it. There are people out there who are dickheads that are going to buy it. So Disney will continue to, you know, make money off of people who are dickheads. You know, that is basically the conclusion we've come to here.
Yeah, you know, buying a pair of Winnie the Pooh pyjamas at 45.
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, there's, it's just not for me. It's not for me, guys. It's really not. It's really not. You know, if you want to go and buy your Winnie the Pooh PJs, great, crack on. But for me, no.
Yeah, if you do want to do that, you are a dickhead, but fine, carry on.
Ruth's just saying it as it is.
Oh, yeah. I always do, mate. Yeah, you always get the truth from me. You know. If you ask me, if you say to me, what does this dress look like? If I think it looks horseshit, I'll say.
I like that. We need more of that.
Yeah.
I'll say.
We're all trying to sort of please each other. And like, we're lying. So I like the truth. I like
it. I will give you the truth with both.
Exactly.
I love that.
Anyway, listen, we always finish, Fern, or we try to always finish with perhaps subjects that are slightly shied away from. We have a section called Don't Go There. We've covered loads of topics, and we sort of alluded to this a little bit at the top of the show about how you really made some changes in your own career, didn't you? And you decided that the career that you had carved, although hugely successful, wasn't the one that you wanted to continue in.
Yeah.
And you've sort of touched on that a little bit. But I wondered whether we could talk to you a little bit more about your kind of mental health and how you've managed that. And obviously feel free to share as much or as little as you want. We also had a specific question in from a listener about catastrophizing. And I know you spoke quite recently about that on your own social media. But you kind of spoke a bit at the top about your depression. Where did that start? Where did you kind of realize that things weren't right for you emotionally?
I think, you know, like you said, I was doing a job that is sort of seen as something that's very shiny and lovely. And, you know, on paper, everything looks like, well, this person must be, extremely happy, but I had a load of other stuff sort of going on in my life that was really difficult and really hard to process, and stuff that I still have therapy about now. And I guess I just couldn't quite make sense of it. And also I didn't have the time to properly look at what was going on, because I was, you know, it was before I had kids. So I was just working relentlessly, you know, and I loved it. I was enjoying doing that, but I didn't leave any room to go, God, you're not coping with what you're dealing with here. And, you know, that led to me, you know, falling into a very dark place and taking medication for some time. And then a little later down the line, I think part of that process was then experiencing panic, because that wasn't in the picture originally. It was just a sort of feeling of despair and a lot of self-loathing and all those sort of undesirable feelings. And then a little later came the panic, which I still deal with now. I've got slightly weird triggers. Some of them I try and challenge. Like I recently have started driving on the motorway again for the first time in years, because I hadn't been able to for a long time. And that one is going well so far, touch wood. But there are other ones that I still really struggle with. I still really struggle with the thought of doing a live TV show that I was that I would be hosting, especially if it wasn't my show. I would find that very tricky, because there are too many variables, too many people that could judge me, too many things that could go wrong. And I don't want to be on the receiving end of mass judgment, because I don't think I could take it. I barely deal with it back then. So I don't push myself to the extremes that I used to anymore. I mean, I didn't used to feel nervous doing any of those things, but now it's not nerves. It's, you know, panic attacks for 8 hours the night before, not being able to, you know, sleep, obviously, my heart racing. So I just stay away from certain things that I know don't work for me. And maybe there'll be a time where I want to push myself if it feels right. But at the moment, I keep things pretty safe. You know, I get to do my podcast, my radio show, and the Happy Place book stuff that we're doing, my own writing and other people's books and the events. And I'm just doing stuff that I know I feel safe in. But, you know, like I said, maybe one day I will feel ready to push that a little bit further and see if I can go back into those spaces without feeling terrible. But it's, you know, it's tricky that we're in a particularly strange time historically. And I don't think it's easy to be someone, and this, I'm not being overly dramatic, but it's not easy to be someone who has a public voice, because everybody's ready to take everyone down. That it's super divisive in every area, and that's a lot of pressure. So I feel very comfortable talking about mental health, well-being, whatever you want to call it, because I've got personal experience and I'm curious to learn more. But if I were to push myself into a more entertainment-based area where I don't feel that's my area of expertise or even passion these days, I think I would find it very hard, because the critique you get back, or the judgment or whatever it is, it's disproportionate to the thing that takes place now. The backlash is always disproportionate, I think, to what's actually happening. Yeah. It's like, God, that's really tricky for anybody to make a mistake, which is integral to being part of a human and growing. To try something new and not get it right. You know, I find that toxic even at my age. And I think that's a real shame for people wanting to try new things, because we should be able to make mistakes and try again and pick ourselves back up. But there's no room for it these days. And that's a terrible, terrible shame.
Do you think, obviously you were relatively young when you kind of stepped into this world. You were only 15. Do you think any of that is there any correlation between your age that you became well known and how you feel about that industry now?
I think maybe. I mean, I have to say, from the age of sort of 15 to 20, I had a really amazing time, because I was working with these brilliant producers, Maddie and Billy at Daryl McQueen, who are a production company that make a lot of kids' TV shows. Yeah. And they were so amazing at looking out for us. We had chaperones. They were just so on it with, you know, how much we were exposed to and how we worked and the hours we worked. So I was really looked after. And I think that gave me a slight false sense of security. And of course, when you then start doing Top of the Pops or whatever, you know, no one's looking out for you. You're out there on your own. And if it goes wrong, on your head be it. So that was an adjustment. And I think, you know, it's such an amalgamation of things from a very young age. I think being judged from a very young age is not healthy. I think I've definitely suffered long term and incrementally due to that. And that is something that I still deal with now. Even if I'm like having coffee with a friend, I have a subconscious thing where I walk away going, did I say something bad? Do they not like me? Because I'm so used to everybody having an opinion about me and what I'm saying, what I'm doing, which is not normal. And I conflate other people's ideas with my own experience. So it has affected me. I think anybody that says it hasn't is probably either lying or hasn't looked at that part of their lives properly. It's not healthy unless you are seriously counterbalancing it with lots of stuff that enables you to feel happy as you are without exterior judgment. I'm not being dramatic. People have far worse going on, but let's be real about this, because there's lots of young people that want to be famous without the passion element attached to it. The passion bit's great. If fame comes from a passion, amazing. Yes. You've done something brilliant and people are acknowledging it. But when it's fame without the other bit, that is hard work. Get ready to be judged from your every move by people you've never met, and you can be taken down. And this new cancel culture thing that I hate, which should not exist. Everybody's allowed to get things wrong. It doesn't mean they're cancelled. We have to stop with that and give people the compassion and empathy. And really, whenever anyone's cancelled, it just shows that the people in charge of that sort of cancelling, or the people that have the power to do that sort of cancelling, are just not happy with the mistakes they've made themselves. If they're judging themselves, they can't have empathy for other people. So the cancel culture thing, I think, is awful. And it does play into my anxiety, and it does play into my nerves around, you know, any sort of public speaking, because, you know, it's a privilege to speak publicly, but it shouldn't have this disproportionate backlash that anything is, you know, even slightly off, which we're seeing everywhere at the moment.
And I think I totally relate to what you're saying there, Fern. Not because, you know, I've had this amazing career from the age of 15, but I think if I think about what kind of Patty and I are doing now with our podcast, and it has kind of grown and it's getting a bit of momentum, and we're getting kind of interest from other people sort of say, oh, actually, we could do this, we could do that. And actually last night coming back on the train, I actually remember...
You should probably explain what we were doing yesterday, though, because not everyone will know.
Exactly. That is a very good thing, Pat. So yesterday, Patty and I went to meet with an agency, and we were sort of chatting to them about sort of the potential with our podcast and what other things we could potentially do with that, and what that could lead to. And which is all amazing. And it's wonderful when people see that potential in you or what you're doing. But at the same time, feeling equally as terrified and overwhelmed by all of that stuff that people were talking about, and thinking, I feel at a point in my life now at 45 with two children that I've managed to kind of, you know, raise, and they're, you know, pretty good, decent people, I hope, I think, you know, and some other sort of life experiences that I've had that haven't been on a public platform or public display, I feel now at 45, I feel like I could cope with that.
Yeah.
But if I was asked to do that at 20, 25, I just know I would not cope with that at all, because I feel it would just completely overwhelm me. So I think there is, like you were saying, there's a lot around kind of the points that in your life that those things happen, and the things around people wanting to just be famous for the sake of being famous, or, you know, the whole thing around everyone having a blue tick being verified, you know, the sort of culture that we have, we've sort of brought about really ourselves. And I just sort of, I really do think there's a big thing around those things being so important. Well,
it's
young
about
people.
Validation, isn't it? Like, we all want to feel like we belong. We all want to feel like we're accepted. And now there seems to be this sort of infrastructure where it's quantified, you know, how valid you are. That's where it's dangerous, because, you know, we could talk to someone today who's got 50 million Instagram followers, you know, the most famous influential person out there, but they will still go to bed at night thinking, oh, you know, this happened and I hated it, and I've fallen out with this friend, and I shouldn't have said that, and I feel lacking in this way. And it doesn't, unless you're doing the work to accept yourself and feel valid yourself, none of it hits the
makes
spot.
Any difference.
But also, it doesn't that lifestyle that we've kind of talked about today doesn't leave any room for trauma or life that happens or difficult things that we go through, because that, you know, everybody, every single person at some point in their life will experience something or multiple things that make them go, God, this is dark. This is really dark. I feel the darkness is closing in. I feel lonely. I feel sad. I feel, and that could be, you know, anything from, you know, something that feels quite trivial to others to something that is absolutely life changing and mind blowing. But what this life doesn't allow for is for people to have and experience those depths of sadness. And I think what we've got to start to do is to just say, we are, like we said at the beginning of the show, really, we are all people, and we all will walk through house fires at some point in our lives. And that means we will have scars, and that means we will get burnt, and that means I'm not going to always say exactly the right thing at the right time. And I think until we start to peel back those layers of culture and people start to say, this is how it felt when I walked through my house fire, and this is what I got wrong, and this is what I would do differently, and this is how I feel now I'm out the other side. Unless we continue to create a space to do that, we're all fucked. Because we're not allowing people to experience that rich tapestry, the myriad of what life throws at us. And that's it, isn't it? Like, you can have 50 million followers, you're still going to have a point in your life where things are shit.
Of course, it doesn't mean, it doesn't protect you from anything.
Exactly.
And also, I think it's how we label things. So, you know, if we think that everything that is challenging in life is inherently bad, awful, a disaster, we're not going to see the gifts in it. And, you know, I went through absolute hell and back at one point in my life and felt absolutely... I felt full of shame and all these horrible feelings. I was sort of publicly being mocked at the time. The press were being awful about me and all these sorts of things. But now looking back, would I be doing anything I'm doing without all of that? No. So my silver lining is huge. And, you know, most awful situations will have something beautiful within it, or an amazing strength or quality that you gain from it that other people won't have because they haven't walked in your shoes. And we can't label everything bad as like, well, that's it, my life is screwed and everyone else's is perfect. You know, we're not we shouldn't be looking to have a perfect life, because that is one without growth. We've got to look for a life that is full of, like you've said, Ruth, you know, the ups and downs and the richness of all experiences, to go, you know, I'm still standing and I'm strong and I'm this and I'm that, but some days I'm weak, but I've learned from that even. And to have, you know, light and shade rather than it being this perfect, sunny, I'm on a red carpet with a blue tick life. Like, what is that?
Exactly. Fern, quickly before we let you go, because I am conscious of time for you, I just wanted to just ask you a bit about the catastrophizing sort of thoughts that you sort of recently mentioned. One, because I'm interested to know kind of your story or how that's kind of happened to you, but also because on a personal level, I think my daughter might be a bit that way inclined as well. She's 15, she's like wonderful, and but she's always been a real worrier. She's right from day one, that's how she's kind of wired. But I'm noticing actually the older she's getting, it's becoming probably a bit more of an issue, I think. You know, she'll, little things like I might take the dog for a walk and she hates me going on my own. Now, that could be like midday, you know, blue sky, everything's fine. Or it could be 9 o'clock at night, it's dark and I'm on my own. She's already starting to, and I'm, there's lots of other sort of examples I'm kind of starting to see. So yeah, I'd just be really interested to kind of get your kind of take and thoughts on that and how you sort of manage that in your life.
I mean, I have periods of, I grew up with a mum who, I hope she won't mind me saying, but she kind of knows she is, who is a catastrophizer. And so I sort of was always aware of that sort of thinking. My mum will always have like the worst case scenario has happened in her head. And when I was younger, I used to think, oh my God, what are you on about? This is crazy. And then now I'm at the point where I've got kids and a lot going on. If I'm, I see it as a warning sign that I've pushed myself too far and I need a break, because my brain is clearly just off and racing. And I had a patch of it in the summer where I was chasing my tail a bit and I found myself having some super dark thoughts. And it again would be, you know, not dissimilar to what your daughter's feeling. Like, my husband would go and take the kids to like the gardening center to have a look at the fish. And then they're a bit longer than I've thought. And I'm like, I've got into horrible story and I can't catch my breath and I can't even get out of it. And it's got to the end of the story where it was all my fault because I said, could I have half an hour on my own? Do you mind taking the kids out? So it's all me, all my fault. Like most of my catastrophizing comes back to me. It's all my fault. I did all of that. I'm responsible. So I think you have to kind of look at the root feeling, and mine is in life, whether it's catastrophizing or not, it's my fault, it's all my fault, I got it wrong. So my catastrophizing goes back to that. So I think often the catastrophizing goes back to something, whether it's rejection or a feeling of not fitting in or a feeling of loneliness or whatever it is. And I have to sort of work at that, because then if I have a catastrophizing thought but I don't loop it back to and it's all my fault, I can go right, okay, let's try replacing that with what if it's just all fine? What if this is actually, what if it all works out okay? What if it's just a nothing? And I think it's hard, and we're all probably feeling it more today because we, you know, for instance, the word news only now has negative connotations, which is bizarre.
Yeah.
The word news could be anything. Like you could say, oh, I've got some news for you, and my heart would probably think, oh my God, you know, there's something exciting. Yeah. But the word news means bad. So we are bombarded with it all day long, constantly. And not only on the news and in papers, but now on our phones. And it's inescapable. Whereas 10 years ago, we didn't have that. We didn't. Sometimes I didn't know what was going on for weeks. And then I'd catch up with something. It's unavoidable. So it's unavoidable. So now we're bombarded with it. I think our brains are rewiring to think only the worst thing can happen, because that's all we hear. We don't counterbalance all the bad stuff with for every climate crisis story we hear, we also need to hear a rewilding story where someone's doing some brilliant environmental project to create more green belts or whatever. For every awful story we hear about racism, we need to hear something that's about inclusivity and people doing brilliant work in that sector. For every awful story we hear about, you know, war-torn countries and female suppression, we also need to hear amazing stories of women who have done brilliant, brave things, and for people that are peacemakers. Like, we have to counterbalance it, because all of that's going on out there. It isn't just all there are really beautiful, miraculous things happening every day. And unless we culturally retrain ourselves to see both of the sides of what's going on, of course we're going to catastrophize, because we're only hearing the bad bits.
Yeah.
And it's hard. They're so smart these days. They hear it all.
Yeah. And I also think as well, we're giving the most supple, hugely developmental brains a little black box that can take them anywhere down any rabbit hole to any, you know, we would, you know, the three-year-old brain, the early development brain is so supple, but the teenage brain is exactly the same. We wouldn't sit a three-year-old down and say, let me tell you about Afghanistan, because we would say, we've got to protect them from that. Their brain is developing, they can't cope with it. Yet at 13, when we know that adolescence now is as big in developmental terms as kind of 0 to 7, we're going, yeah, look, we don't need to protect you from this stuff anymore. Here you go. Here's this machine.
Yeah.
You can log into Facebook and see that your nan's had a stroke without being told that by your parents in a kind way. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, you can get a BBC News notification that says 6 million people have just died somewhere across the other side of the world. Like, we've got to realise that our teenagers can't cope with the bombarding that they're getting and this constant anxiety cycle. We can't. That's right.
We can't as adults. We cannot. Absolutely. Yeah. It's too much for us. We're not coping. Look at the rates of depression. Look at the horrendous rates of suicide, especially over the last year and a half, of course.
Yeah.
You know, look at the anxiety that's rising in people. We're not coping. We're not doing anything to change it. We're just going, oh, well, I guess I just have to keep plodding along with this because this is just how it is. Well, it doesn't have to be. It used to be like this. We used to find out what was going on in the world, you know, at our own will when we wanted to, and now we don't have a choice, and we're not coping with it. And I don't know what the solution is, but we can't carry on like we are. It's no good.
What do you do Fern, like, do you have kind of things now that you go to sort of help you manage that stuff when you are feeling like, I know my brain is now going out of control and I'm thinking the worst things about every situation? Are there tools that you know you've got now that you can go to that help you to sort of manage that?
Yeah, like I felt yesterday I went out on a walk and I know I have to listen to something that is based on fact and that is grounding. And for me, there's an amazing podcast by Eckhart Tolle, which is called The Essential Teachings. And it's just him talking. But he is, you know, he is without ego. So he's telling you not things for his benefit, not things to make him look good. He's talking the essential truth of what this experience of being a human being is. You've got to take it to like a big, big level of, right, I'm a human, I'm on a floating globe in space here. And I'm dealing with a lot of weirdness that's been normalized. And it's going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot flying around because of that. And he, listening to him talk for an hour and having a walk outside usually gets, and then I might bump into a neighbor and then I'm like, oh, that was quite cheery. I just had a nice little chat about something with them. And then by the time I get home, I'm a little bit better. But in more serious times where, you know, I've had massive panic attack, you know, panic attacks and episodes that are too close together, I've had to make big changes in my life. So, you know, I don't really do TV anymore. And I said I might one day, but I don't at the moment. And I don't I don't really do much live stuff because I just can't put myself in that. My body doesn't feel safe in that position. So I've made life changes that I've been lucky enough to make. But they've been hard. Yeah. It hasn't been like, oh, yay, I don't get to do it. It's been heartbreaking, but I've had to do it. And also, you know, therapy. And I'm fortunate enough to be able to do that. And not enough people are. And it's a real shame that therapy isn't as accessible as it should be. And, you know,
completely agree.
Being on a waiting list for 6 months, you know, it isn't going to cut it. So, you know, luckily there are lots of charities that offer amazing support, whether it's Mind or Prince's Trust, Calm, etc. But, you know, I think sometimes we do need to step out of our comfort zone and talk to someone else and work through stuff. And also know that it's fine that it's happening. Like, you know, it's not ideal that I can't do a job that I used to love. And it's not ideal that I drive on the motorway for ages, but it's okay. It's not the end of the world. It's okay. Yeah. You know, totally. I grow from it and learn from it. So I think it's how we sort of view our own lives that, it, you know, we're just walking around on a floating ball in space. Like, what the hell? Let's just go to that every time we feel like going out of our minds.
That is a very good one. Yeah. I'm going to give that one to my Nella. When she's going there, I'm like, Nella, we're on a floating ball.
You know what I do, right? This is another little thing that I do. When it was warm last week, the kids were in bed and it was just getting dark. Actually, no, it was dark. And I came outside and I lay down in the garden and I just looked up at, you know, obviously what a lot of light. But I looked at the few stars I could see. And that's when you go, I am just lying on my back on a ball floating in space, looking at other balls of light out there. Like, this is wild.
That's amazing.
This is cooler than anything I'm going to see on social media today. This is not any film I'm going to watch. Yeah. I'm laying on a floating ball in space, looking at stars that are balls of light thousands of millions of miles away.
Yeah. And I think those grounding techniques in terms of anxiety, you know, walking out on the cold concrete, drinking a cold glass of ice cold water, lying on your back on the ground, you know, we underestimate how much as humans when we actually physically ground ourselves.
Absolutely.
And we stop and we say, right, I'm putting my phone down. I'm going to walk onto my patio with no shoes or socks on and I'm going to feel the cold concrete on my feet. Yeah. We forget how helpful those very simplistic grounding techniques are when it comes to managing anxiety and stopping that ruminating, catastrophizing, because it stops it in its tracks. You can't be thinking about the cold feet on the floor and catastrophizing. Your brain can't do both.
No.
So you get out there, you feel the grass on your feet and you go, oh, this is sensory. God, this feels nice. Oh, now I'm thinking about the grass between my toes and I'm looking at that flower over there and I'm looking up at the sun or the stars or whatever. And I think we forget that actually that helps our brain to put away the stuff that it's running away with.
Completely.
And it is very simplistic, but it absolutely does work. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I think so. It's simple stuff. It's never it's never complicated, or you don't have to do some weird thing that you've read in a magazine, celebrity phase. Just simple stuff. Go for a walk.
Fern, you have been, honestly, you have been absolutely, I'm so grateful.
Wonderful.
We are so grateful to you.
Thank
you. Just giving up your time. You can obviously find Fern's podcast across all podcast platforms. You probably already know about it. I mean, it's had 40 million downloads.
There'll be people that don't, and we want them over there. So that's great.
Well, look, happy place. I absolutely love it. I'm loving this series. I think you've had some
amazing
brilliant
guests.
People talking about the Saran Jones one. Oh my god,
I love her.
She was just absolutely brilliant.
Have you been watching? Have you watched that Vigil?
Yeah, which is it's amazing.
I haven't watched Vigil yet, but I loved I Am Victoria.
That was brilliant.
Oh, I've not seen that.
So good.
Oh, yeah, she is good though. Yeah,
yeah. And
good.
That podcast you did with. So if you don't know Happy Place, you can find obviously Fern on social media as well. But if you are struggling or want to kind of delve into this area of kind of mental health and understanding happiness and stuff like that, I would absolutely recommend Happy Place. You can find it on all podcast platforms. Fern, from us at Finding the Funny to you, thank you so much for giving up your time.
I loved it. Thank you so much. I can't wait to see you ladies again soon in the flesh.
Oh, very soon.
Let's hope so. And we can all have a drink of the old Vin Rouge.
Yes.
Yes.
And not at a wedding.
And not at a wedding. Yes.
How amazing is Fern Cotton?
Oh my gosh. I mean, she is just the loveliest human being, isn't she?
She's amazing, isn't she? Yeah.
Just genuine, kind, funny, warm, all of those words.
Yeah.
Are Fern. She was just
relatable. She is just
So grateful for her.
So grateful
to give up her, hour or so of her time and just come and have a chat with us. And I mean, her shitting tits,
fantastic.
I mean, that was
a bit annoyed we haven't come up with that.
Same,
yeah, it was a good one.
But also good that we had, you know, the legendary Fern to bring it.
It was really good.
Bloody good.
Well, listen, we are so grateful to Fern. We've had a great chat with her. We hope that the things that she's talked about, both the funny, have lifted your spirits, and the more serious stuff have kind of helped you if you're struggling with anything. Don't forget, you can find Happy Place on all big podcast platforms. You can find Ange and I on social media. I'm at Ruth Corden.
And I'm at Ange Corden. You can also find us on Facebook. Just search Finding the Funny Podcast. Or you can send us an email. hello@ruthcorden.com.
But Ange and I, just the two of us again next week, we will be back right here helping you to find more of the funny.